My name is Anthony, and you are listening to Gangland Wire, the best mafia and true crime podcast on the internet today.
Hey, I hope I'm calling the right number.
My name is Kim, and I'm a detective sergeant in the Atlanta metro area and a gang investigator. And I love listening to the Gangland Wire podcast.
Former Kansas City Police Department intelligence detective and now attorney Gary Jenkins produced four documentary films, most recently Gangland Wire, creator of smartphone app entitled Kansas City Mob Tours. Download it now. If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. Navigate to the shop page. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Gangland Wire True Crime Stories is produced at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Well, good evening, all you wiretappers out there in wiretapping land. I'm here in the Big Dumb Fun Show Studios in the beautiful Ice House building, Studio 4, with my good friend and co-host, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
Well, Aaron, tonight we're going to stray away from the mob a little bit. In January 1958, newsmen from all across the West jammed into the Wyoming, as Converse County Courthouse in Wyoming, hoping to get a glimpse of the notorious killer Charles Starkweather. This was a huge deal. It would be like they'd stop the presses for Starkweather and his girlfriend Carol Ann Fugate. They had been on a killing spree across the Midwest that was unbelievable. I remember it as like it was yesterday. Charles Starkweather was 19 years old in earlier 1958, and he was a swaggering, good-for-nothing in blue jeans and a black motorcycle jacket. He had long red hair that he swooped back into a ducktail. He was the kind of guy that would just yell, "Go to hell," at strangers. He was stocky and well-built, but he was small. He was only 5'5". Wore rimless glasses. He always wore cowboy boots. He was kind of a James Dean wannabe. He was a rebel without a cause, or a rebel whose cause was instilling fear and terror into his random strangers that he killed. He would remark after he was killed to the sheriff, "I always wanted to be a criminal, but not this big one." He confessed to all of his murders and even accepted responsibility for an additional victim, a 21-year-old gas station attendant who had recently been discharged from the Navy. Was killed 2 months later, in 2 months earlier in 1957.
So when he said he didn't want to be this big a criminal, he just meant that he didn't want to be big enough to be put in the electric chair?
Right. He most wanted on the top of the most wanted list and looking at the death penalty. It started out in 1957. Charles Starkweather took up with a 14-year-old girl named Carol Fugate. She dated him for several months, and then she broke up with him on Sunday, January 19th. Later that week, on Tuesday, January 21st, she got home from school, and the house was empty except for Starkweather, who said that her family is being held captive and we'd be killed if she didn't cooperate. But by that time, Carol Fugate's stepfather, Marion Bartlett, and her mother, Velda Bartlett, and Carol's two-year-old sister, half-sister, actually, Betty Jean Bartlett, were already dead and their bodies stowed in outbuildings on the property. For the next 6 days, Charles Starkweather and Carol Fugate stayed in the family's, her family's Lincoln, Nebraska home. Carol would just turn away visitors when they came, including her sister, grandmother, brother-in-law, and even Charlie Starkweather's brother, saying that her family was sick. She even posted a warning on the door, "Stay away, everybody is sick with the flu, Ms. Bartlett." She even underlined Ms. Bartlett twice. Carol would later say that was her attempt to signal that there was trouble, since the home's only Miss Bartlett, M-I-S-S Bartlett, was her two-year-old sister. Finally, after a week or so, Carol's grandmother, Ms. Bartlett's mother, threatened to call the police because she wanted to get in. She suspected something was wrong, so Charlie Starkweather fled with Carol, driving 15 miles southeast to Bennett, Nebraska, where he had a friend named August Mayer. The unsuspecting mayor, who thought Starkweather was a friend, opened his door to the pair and even offered his horses for free because their car was bogged down in the mud. He was going to take his horses out and pull the car out of the mud. But as the 70-year-old mayor led them out to the stables to get the horses, Starkweather pulled out his shotgun and killed the old man, who was his friend. He then beat the old man's dog to death. Carol Fugate would later say that this unexpected brutality and Charlie's earlier threats convinced her that the only option was to obey Starkweather and do what he said. Now, I don't know if she knew that her stepfather and mother and half-sister had already been killed by Charlie. I suspect that she did.
I'm just looking here on Wikipedia. They have a page for Charlie Starkweather and the... says that January 21st of 58, when Starkweather went to the Fugate's home, Fugate was actually not there. And after Fugate's mother and stepfather, Velda and Marion Bartlett, told him to stay away, Starkweather killed them with his shotgun, then killed their 2-year-old daughter, Betty Jean, by strangling and stabbing her.
My guy was nuts, wasn't he?
Yeah. After Fugate arrived, they hid the bodies. They hid the bodies behind the house. They remained in the house until shortly after, before the police, alerted by Fugate's suspicious grandmother, arrived on the 27th of January. It seems odd, you know, he was more than willing to kill here an 80-year-old man who said he was his friend, the parents of his love, her sister. But when the grandmother shows up or makes threats, they run away.
Yeah, well, the grandma must have, she must have made the threat at the door to Carol and then walked away and went out somewhere and called the police, more than likely. And when they realized she'd gone to call the police, they took off. It was always a point of contention as to how much Carol knew and how much she was a willing accomplice or a victim of Charles Starkweather. After they had killed old Mr. Mayor, later that night, they're walking along the road because they still haven't got their car out. And I guess the only thing Mr. Mayor had was his team of horses. They're walking along the road, and 17-year-old Robert Jensen and his 16-year-old girlfriend, Carol King, offered Charlie and Carol a ride. They became the next victims. Starkweather even raped Carol King and then shot and killed both King and Jensen and left their bodies in a storm cellar of a nearby house. Now they had a car. They returned back to Lincoln, where they started from, Lincoln, Nebraska, in
Jensen's car.
Robert Jensen's car. And they drove into an upper-middle-class neighborhood looking for a place to hide. A local prominent businessman named C. Lauer Ward was the unfortunate homeowner where they selected to try to get in and hide. The next day, Ward and his wife Clara and Lillian Finsel, their maid, were found dead. Now that we got another car, Starkweather and Fugate used Ward's 1956 Packard to flee Nebraska, heading west for Washington State, where Charlie had a brother who lived. Now By then, the headlines are coming out. They're hot. Everybody knew who they were. I remember some of these headlines. This young couple are on the run. They had pictures of them. And remember, she's only 14 years old. They get near Douglas, Wyoming, and Starkweather decides he better ditch his Packard because it's too hot. So near a turnoff at the Ayers Natural Bridge, he spots Merle Colson, a 37-year-old shoe salesman from Great Falls, Montana, who's parked along the side of a road. He's probably a traveling salesman, and he had stopped to take a nap. Starkweather approaches the vehicle, taps on the window. Colson looks up. He demands that Colson get out of the car, and when he didn't, Starkweather fired several more rounds through the windshield, killing Colson.
Well, that wouldn't make the car look suspicious at all, with the windows having bullet holes in them.
Well, you just
driving down the interstate.
He just rolled down the window. That's the deal. And the guys that steal cars, that'll break out one window to get in and steal the car, then they'll just roll down that window or make it look like it's all of it. You'll totally break the whole thing out so it looks like it's rolled down. In this case, you just roll it down.
Here under the Wikipedia, it says that Starkweather later accused Fugate of performing a coup de grace after his shotgun jammed. Fugate performed the coup de grace after his shotgun jammed on Merle Colson.
Oh, on Mr. Colson. Yeah, that's what we were just talking about, was Mr. Colson. Okay, yeah.
Here it says, Starkweather claimed Fugate was the most, quote-unquote, trigger-happy person he'd ever met, besides himself.
Besides himself.
I mean, if you know trigger-happy, you definitely could tell, because you are that guy. The salesman's car had a push-pedal emergency brake, which was somewhat new to Starkweather. While attempting to drive away, the car stalled. He tried to restart the engine and a passing motorist stopped to help. Starkweather threatened him with a rifle and an altercation ensued.
Is that when they ended up in a 100-mile-an-hour chase through Wyoming?
I'm looking here because I just jumped way out of your notes and probably.
Oh, that was the brake deal on Colson's car. He couldn't get the emergency brake off on Colson's car.
So this other guy comes along.
So Joe Sprinkle comes along and he stops and see if he could help. Then Sprinkle saw Colson's body stuffed under the dashboard. Then Charlie pulled his shotgun back out. Sprinkle realized that if Starkweather won, I would be dead. Sprinkle was 6 foot tall and had a huge physical advantage over Starkweather. Was only 5 foot five and kind of small, and they began wrestling for the gun. Sprinkle ended up wrestling it away from him. As the two wrestled, the Natrona County Deputy Sheriff William Romer drove up. When he got out to investigate, that's when Carol Fugate, as you said, bolted from Collison's car and ran toward Romer, screaming, "He's going to kill me. He's crazy. He just killed a man." Meanwhile, Starkweather jumps back into the Ward's Packard, turns it around, and heads back toward Douglas, Wyoming. Romer, staying behind with Fugate, who had identified the fleeing man as Starkweather, radioed for help.
Fugate jump in the car? Then
no, she stayed behind. They were able to hang on to her. The deputy sheriff from Natrona County, was able to hang on to her. So they know Starkweather is now on the run again, but he's by himself. Douglas, Wyoming Police Chief Bob Ansell and Converse County Sheriff Earl Heflin set up a roadblock near Douglas. Starkweather blew through it. This is like something out of the TV. Ansell gave chase at speeds exceeding 100 miles an hour through downtown Douglas. And Heflin, the county sheriff, was with him, firing out the window at the fleeing Starkweather. God, this is crazy, isn't it? East of town, a bullet finally shattered Packard's rear window, spraying glass everywhere. Starkweather suddenly slammed on the brakes and came to a screeching halt. Lawmen jump out and demand that he give up and fired a few more rounds in the car. With that, Starkweather surrendered. Asked why Starkweather gave up, the county sheriff Heflin says, "I guess he just thought he was going to bleed to death. That's the kind of yellow son of a bitch he is." Flying glass could only nick Starkweather's earlobe and right hand, but he'd also ran out of ammunition. He said he said he would have shot it out if he hadn't ran out of ammo. They never would have caught me if I hadn't stopped.
No, I don't think that was true. I mean, Wyoming's a big state. Have you ever driven across it?
Yeah, it is.
Even at 100 miles an hour, it takes a while.
It takes a while. They would have caught him there. The state patrol would have been screaming in.
You're like, he's on the highway outside of Douglas, and then he's driving, speeding through downtown Douglas. I'm like, oh, this must be before they built the interstate that goes around Douglas.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is long before this. This was at the start of the interstate highway system, so it was a little bit different back then.
Well, these guys must have been pretty proud that they caught him.
Oh, you know it. You know it. Like I said, this was national news at the time. Governor of Wyoming, Millard Simpson, said he would defer to the Nebraska prosecutors because that's where the first murders were. Now, Simpson was a staunch death penalty opponent, and he had announced that if he were convicted in Wyoming and sentenced to death by a Wyoming jury, he would commute the sentence. So he elected to defer prosecution to Nebraska, and the prosecutor attorney in Converse County in Wyoming said, how can I dare try this man here knowing the governor would come out against capital punishment? So everybody agreed that they would allow him to be extradited immediately back to Nebraska. So Carol Fugate, she's alternately sobbing hysterically and sitting quietly, and she claims to officers that Starkweather made her sit in a car with that dead man, talking about Mr. Collison.
But Judge Henry A. Spencer did not believe that Fugate was held hostage by Starkweather, as she had had numerous opportunities to escape. When Starkweather was first brought into the Nebraska penitentiary, he stated that he believed that he was supposed to die, and that if he was executed, then Fugate should be too.
I turned on her. Now, Carol, when they first got hold of her, she was very nervous and upset and acted like she was in a state of shock, and she grew increasingly agitated until the Converse County, that's in Wyoming, Sheriff Heflin had her sedated. Next morning, she cried and screamed for her mother and wondered why she couldn't call her parents. Heflin told reporters he really believed that she didn't know her folks had been killed. When Nebraska authorities came back to Converse or Douglas, Wyoming, they confronted her with the fact that her family was truly dead. They said she broke down, twisting tissues into tiny doll shapes. Starkweather initially identified, you said he broke on her at the end, but initially he identified his girlfriend as a captive. He insisted she didn't have anything to do with it, and she even tried to get away a couple times, and he stopped her. But Nebraska prosecutors still charged Carol with murder.
Well, and if you read earlier here in the Wikipedia, Starkweather later admits shooting Jensen from the teenagers where they stole the car.
Yeah.
Back in Nebraska, but he claimed that Fugate shot King.
Fugate shot the girl.
Yeah,
wow.
And the two fled.
Now, when Carol Fugate was arrested, she had clippings in her pocket that related to her family's murder. So she did have some idea that her family was dead. They'd been clipping the their own newspaper headlines and hanging on to them.
Hanging on to them. So then when they killed the industrialist, Laura Ward.
Yeah.
Here, Starkweather and Fugate filled Ward's black 56 Packard with stolen jewelry from the house and fled Nebraska. This is that would be, I guess, what Starkweather would say.
Yeah, put the jewelry in there since she was a girl.
And Starkweather was given the death penalty because the governor of Wyoming was opposed to the death penalty.
Right, so they sent him back to Nebraska.
They sent him back to Nebraska, where they charge him with the death penalty for the murder of Robert Jensen.
Eventually, he flipped, as you said, and claimed that she was responsible for the death of the King girl. She would be convicted and sentenced to life in prison. She spent, Carol Fugate spent 18 years in the Nebraska Correctional Center for Women in York, Nebraska. She was a model prisoner and was paroled in 1976. She moved out of state, moved to Michigan, and refused most interviews and lived as quietly as possible. Now, Sheriff Romer from Douglas, Converse County, Wyoming, continued to insist on her guilt. She told me they made up a story to make her look good so she could get off. They tied up her hands and she worked them around so she could get rope burns on her wrist. That way she could always say she was a prisoner. Many people up in this Nebraska, Wyoming rural area will never forget this infamous crime spree that shattered their sense of security normally enjoyed by residents of these quiet, peaceful, largely rural communities. But, you know, another interesting thing about the Starkweather crime spree is it was the first one that played out on television. 1957, you had the three, NBC, ABC, and CBS, mm-hmm. and they ran every television. And by, you know, latter part of the 50s, most everybody had a TV in their house, except for just a few rural people. Primarily, everybody had a television. And so people, this was reported widely and was breaking news, and kind of lurid, excited responses by reporters on the scene on television, going from little Lincoln, Nebraska, out to New York City and to Chicago and Kansas City and Dallas and Fort Worth and Denver and California, all over the place. And the newspaper reporters flooded in from the television stations and followed this case, and were able, when he was arrested, were able to relay images of Starkweather and Fugate immediately. That had never really happened before. Usually had to wait for, the next day or two and see it in the newspaper. They might have a picture in the newspaper, but this was, it was almost live, or certainly was on your evening news. So that was another kind of a first that they engaged in. This was certainly a first for most people in the United States, and caught their attention. And I tell you what, these rural people, my brother lived up on a farm in Plattsburgh, and we had a guy in the south central part of the state that was suspected of going across the middle part of the state. He was wanted for a couple of murders, and he was breaking into farmers' homes. And if they weren't home, I'd stay there for a little bit, maybe clean up, take a shower, get some food, and head back out again. And they found several of these homes he'd broken into. And I remember talking to my brother, and I could tell he was upset. He was visibly shaken by this whole deal, because, you feel out there in the country, you just feel so vulnerable. You don't have 911 and a cruising policeman within 10 or 15 blocks away to come by, and you don't have any neighbors to come in. If I had a problem at my house, I could at least run to a neighbor's house and find somebody that might do something, or you could hide in their house or something if somebody was after you, or they could call the police. You don't have that out in the country. You're all on your own. That's one reason why every country home will have more than just a hunting rifle or two. They'll have some kind of home defense kind of a gun. I think that's why assault rifles, they got in such an uproar about banning assault rifles, because most of these rural homes, they really depend on themselves. They don't depend on the police to help them out.
Well, I mean, they're so far away. Even back then, they had regular phones of some sort, maybe party lines, so they could call. But like Merle Colson, he's on the side of the road. There's no calling anybody there.
Right.
Right. Now, but I don't know about the wealthy industrialist and his wife and their maid. They opened the door on the wrong day.
And that could happen to anybody. That could happen to me or you tonight.
Now, what about somebody like, I'm reading through here the list of the victims, and Robert Colvert, who was the gas station attendant, the Fugate stepfather, Marianne Bartlett, and his wife. And then the Velda and Marion Bartlett's daughter, who was Fugate's half-sister, Betty Jean Bartlett, all killed. But somebody like Starkweather's friend, obviously Marion and his wife knew, like, this guy, he needs to get out of here.
Yeah, he needs
right?
to. As the man says, he needs to go. He needs to go bye-bye.
Yeah, but somebody like August Mayer, who was, like a friend of Starkweather.
Right.
How do you kind of go, well, this guy doesn't seem right? Or how do you just, I guess when you're 70, any friend you can get?
I don't, who knows about the history of that? He may have known Starkweather's parents or something, and had always been kind of friendly to him. Never know about those deals. Obviously, the guy was a psychopath of some kind. I don't know what his particular pathology was, but he had no empathy for anybody, and he even turned on his woman there at the end.
Interestingly enough here, so then he was executed by the electric chair in the Nebraska State Penitentiary in Lincoln, Nebraska. I've been by that place. I've on a number of occasions. And at 12:04 a.m. on June 25th, 1959, and then buried in the Wyuka Cemetery in Lincoln, along with five of his victims.
No, they're all five of his. The Bartletts were all buried in the same cemetery as Starkweather,
including Mr. and Mrs. Ward.
And the Wards, I'll be darned.
Surprised that somebody didn't say, "Hey, why don't you guys go bury him somewhere else?"
Really? I probably, they may not have thought about it. How long? What date was he executed?
June 25th, 1959.
Wow. See, it only took 2 years. That's unusual. In this day and age, you hardly ever get anybody executed within 10, 15 years. Those guys down in Arkansas, they're trying to execute now. Some of those have been on death row for 20 years. And they still can't get them executed.
It doesn't fit your
been in death row so long, their drugs are wearing out.
Yeah.
They can't execute them.
I was going to say it's a little far away and it's not mob related, but you could definitely not disturb anybody if you added that to the Kansas City mob tour.
Well,
no one's going to, I mean, maybe somebody's going to get upset. These people keep driving by our cemetery.
I don't mind putting grave sites on it.
You know, you know what they say, they're dying to get in. The other interesting thing about Fugate, then her remarriage to Frederick Clare in 2007. And apart from this, where it says a radio interview in 96, has refused to speak about the murder spree. And now Carol Ann Clare was living in Stryker, Ohio, when she was seriously injured and her husband killed in a car crash August 5th of 2013.
And then in 2012, the Casper, Wyoming newspaper, the Star Tribune, wrote an article on this crime, a look back at the Starkweather Fugate crime spree, and an online commentator and an online commenter posted Fugate's new full married name, address, phone number, and as a threat to her, stated he wanted to remind her that she could not expect to remain anonymous. And as a screen name, this commenter took the name of the Bennett, Nebraska victim whose body had been left in a storm cellar, Robert Jensen. That was he was the young guy that was killed with his girlfriend. Obviously, probably a relative of Mr. Jensen. So, see, that this whole internet thing and the ability to post things for a lot of people to see is kind of scary sometimes. So I think all of us who have any kind of an audience need to use some discretion in what we put out there.
Well, just because you can find stuff on the internet doesn't mean it's true. And I think you want to take the time to kind of say, check your facts to the degree that you can. I mean, now I've referenced Wikipedia here, which is kind of an encyclopedia, but everybody kind of can edit it. So, when the community at large kind of agrees with those facts, they don't change largely on the Wikipedia.
Right. When you can find it on another website and another website, kind of the basic facts of a crime like that, what you were reading off.
Yeah. But as I understand it, you still can't use Wikipedia in court.
No. And do not reference Wikipedia in school.
Yeah, as evidence or something. But
or in a true crime novel or anything like that. It has no credibility. You better get it someplace else. All right. Well, I think we've done it on Charles Starkweather and Carol Fugate, a very interesting case, and kind of changed the way the media covered these kinds of crimes. Because this was for the first time the television media got into these crimes and sent out people and broadcast these images, the images of Carol Fugate and Charles Starkweather first being arrested and being taken out of the county jail and taken back to Nebraska and things like that. First time that ever happened. They're quite exciting. You know, I was just watching the story on the Oklahoma City bombing, and they had these images. All the newspaper reporters showed up at the county jail where Timothy McVeigh was being held, and they took him out in his orange jumpsuit. And it's probably one of the most famous iconic images of a perk walk that I still remember this day, of them walking Timothy McVeigh out and putting in a van and taking him back down to Oklahoma City to put him in jail.
Yeah, they're probably waiting for that Jack Ruby moment.
Yeah, really.
Given
yeah,
the nature
exactly.
of his crime.
You know, the news people are like that. They say there always is a load of camera people in the in a special van about three or four cars behind the president in every motorcade. And that's so if some shooting situation, terrorist, dangerous situation goes down with the president, they can jump out and be recording it right away. So there's, you know, if it bleeds, it leads.
And Charles Starkweather certainly made it bleed.
And he got the lead, didn't he? All right, time for my...
public service announcement.
Thank you, Aaron. Time for my public service announcement. If you have a friend or relative, a loved one that has a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900, or if you're from out of the city, go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. You will find some resources to use there. What do you got to say to that, Aaron?
I've got to say folks need to go to ganglandwire.com. Share, subscribe, support. Get on our mail list. That way, when an episode comes out, you get an email notification for great episodes like our Alan Gunnar Lindblom two-parter about the Detroit mob and his infamous crimes. Sign up for our email list, and we will give you a PDF document or two or three.
Actually, you'll get my book, a free Kindle or EPUB or PDF copy of my latest book, Surveillance Stories.
And, of course, you need to get the documentary that started it all, Gangland Wire, available on Amazon for purchase. Or get the book that Gary just released, Leaving Vegas.
How FBI wiretaps ended mob domination of Las Vegas casinos.
And download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. For $1.99, you can take your own personalized tour of notorious mob locations in and around Kansas City.
Oh, a friend of mine called me the other day. This does a Black History tour of downtown, a walking tour of downtown Kansas City, and he's going to start a walking mob tour of downtown Kansas City. I'm going to help him with the sites and give him some text and everything and educate him a little bit about the sites he doesn't know anything about. So we'll look forward to that if you're a Kansas Cityan or you're going to visit Kansas City. Look for Eric Stafford's walking mob tour of downtown Kansas City.
And remember to put a hit out on our donate button. You can sign up for a monthly subscription and become one of our MADE members.
Become a soldier?
Become a mob associate for $10 and get two extra episodes and some protection. Become a soldato for $25 or more, a capo regime for $35 or more, a soto capo for $50 or more, or become the don of your city.
A capo de tutti de capi.
For $500.
A one-time donation. All right, say goodnight, Aaron.
Goodnight. Bumper music provided by Odd-O-Matic. Check them out on Facebook at Odd-O-Matic Music.
What do you think about the charges, sir?
The charges is funny. They got one person putting people that don't even know each other for a cigarette.
So, Mr. Vitra, this is my camera
and then
over here.
They give you $300,000 bail, house arrest, and a bracelet.